podcast for heroes in the world of Overwatch. This is The Payload.
Everybody, welcome to episode number 29 of The Payload. We are an Overwatch podcast from blizzpro.com. I am John Horstman out of Denver, Colorado, and with me, of course, is the crew. We've got a special guest, though. So, Kevin, JR, good to see you guys. Glad that you are here.
No.
You know, you get time to talk every week. We know. Kevin from Saskatoon. Hi, John. Good to be here. Jimmy from Ventura, California, just gone. He just stopping.
That was the point I was going to make. That's Jimmy, not JR.
Jimmy. Oh, did I say JR?
You totally said JR.
Oh, I thought I said Kevin. Oh, I get it. I thought it was bypassing.
No. Bypass. By all means, bypass.
Sorry, JR. I mean, Jimmy. He just up and left when I said that. How embarrassing.
Guys, screw this. I'm out. I'm done.
It's all good.
We have a special guest this week from Icarus Gamers on YouTube. He writes stuff for Gosu Gamers. He's one of the main contributors to the Hero Meta reports that we talk about weekly. Can I just call you Icarus? Is that all right? Icarus?
Yeah, that's cool.
Cool. Well, welcome to the show, man. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. What are you, let's start. Normally when we get going on the show, we talk about our weeks in Overwatch and what we've been up to in the game or around the game. So Icarus, I'll let you go first. What have you been up to this last week with Overwatch?
Well, I have a friend who isn't level 25 yet, so I've been trying to power level with him so that we can play ranked together.
Great.
And I've been practicing some rollouts on King of the Hill. I'm going to make a video on that, I think. And that's been a lot of my time. It's just in King of the Hill practicing, like, all right, what can I do with this hero? All that sort of stuff. And I played some ranks with a friend. I'm actually on my 9th calibration game, which I just played like an hour ago.
Wow.
And currently 4-5, so not the best score. But
no, it sounds... That's way more intricate than I could even kind of fathom for myself. So that's amazing that you're kind of sitting down to do with that. I have a question. How much time outside of playing the game each week do you spend just digesting Overwatch stuff and doing your articles and video stuff on YouTube?
I don't really know. It's like a lot of free time, I would say. Maybe 3 to 4 hours a day or something like that.
Wow.
It's a lot of stuff I wouldn't really call work, though, just like watching streams and stuff like that.
That's awesome. Well, hey, man, welcome to the show. We're really glad to have you here. The stuff Thanks. That you're putting out is just amazing. And so we had the opportunity to hit you up and get you on the show. It was a no-brainer. I didn't even ask Kevin and Jimmy. I just sent the email. And I'm like, hey, I sent the email to Icarus. And they're like, great. Good job. So that's
really awesome.
All right, Jimmy, how about you, man? How's your week been in Overwatch?
Non-existent because I'm currently moving. So been pretty chaotic for me, unfortunately. I'm really, really itching to get into competitive, though. So I have that to look forward to, at least.
You're not missing much right now.
Yeah, I was talking with JR. He said the placement matches are a little rough because of how wide the MMR matching is. But it sounds like from most people I've talked to, once you get placed, it's relatively good, minus the other issues that we're going to talk about later. But yeah, I'm just really excited to eventually dive into competitive.
Yeah, don't get your hopes up too high because we had quite the time, didn't we, Kev?
Yeah, we really did. I mean, okay, let's backtrack. the whole point of the placement system is just to figure out where you belong in terms of taking your existing MMR at a fairly low confidence interval, moving it around a little bit, and placing you in terms of a skill rating, right? Like, that's all it's for. It's 10 games that you're not necessarily supposed to win all of them. I see people posting pictures where they're like, they go 9-1 in their placements, and they end up doing substantially worse than someone who goes like 3-7, right? It's not necessarily about how many you win or lose. They're just using that to help figure out where your MMR belongs. So it's kind of a, I would say it's a pretty minor thing on the whole. But yeah, you're right, John. Like, so we were playing games, a group of three of us. And I will say, for anybody who is thinking about going in and doing the competitive thing, you got to be very careful, because one of the things that the matchmaker does is it hard matches group size. So if you go in as a four stack, you're going to play against a four stack. That's going to happen. And it's unpleasant. I would go so far as to say it's unpleasant. If you haven't been practicing with a group of people, you don't know strategies that go with, you know, your group and each map, and you just jump in there thinking, yeah, this will be good, it's more fun to play with my friends, you are going to get obliterated. And that's basically the experience that John and I had the other night. We went, what, 1-4?
1-4. We're like, this is going to be really fun. We're going to play competitively. We're going to play some other people who are in a group who are bad at wanting to be competitive. And instead, we just get stomped.
Murdered. Totally murdered.
We barely eke out one win. And then the other ones, we didn't even get out the door. People are like escorting the payload with like 6 minutes left.
We got
lucky,
right? We got the right side of the sudden death. That was why we got a win at all.
Stupid coin flip. We're gonna talk about that later too. We're gonna talk. Oh, I'm gonna rail them. I'm just kidding. It's not that bad.
Yeah, me too.
Let's. Should we talk about it? Should we just go into the news and talk about it? All right. Let's do it.
This week in Overwatch.
So we already touched on a little bit. Competitive mode is live, and it's also live as of about 7 hours ago on Xbox One, and I don't think it's hit PS4 yet. I haven't checked in the last couple hours, but it hadn't hit PS4 yet at this point. So competitive mode is live. We talked a little bit about the placement matches. Icarus, have you gotten to do your placement matches yet on PC, or are you still grinding with your friends before you do that?
Only 9 of them. So only I'm 1 9. Away.
Okay.
Yeah.
How have you been doing?
4 or 5, but every game I have at least one medal, which makes me hopeful that I'm going to get calibrated okay.
Sure.
I've had some really awesome games where I got like 4 medals as well, though.
How
gold medals.
How was the experience for you going through the placement matches? Did you go in a group? Was it like, oh, this is really fun? Or were you stressed the whole time? What was it like for you?
I played with one other friend, and it was really fun. Like, the matches were super intense and stuff, and they felt balanced. And then once I got to like my 7th game, we decided to go with a full team of 6, and that was a really bad idea because we just got absolutely destroyed. Barely managed to like get to a sudden death, but then it wasn't even close. It's not fun.
Yeah. Wow. Kev, what about you, man? Talk about your early impressions of the game and competitive so far.
I mean, I think competitive has been, broadly speaking, good. You definitely see, I would say, a lot less, like, when I jumped into quick play the other night on console to work on leveling up my console account, I got a group who was like, all right, let's do it. We're going 6 Roadhogs. And you just do it, and it's awesome, and it's hilarious. I've seen none of that in competitive. Like, group compositions are usually well-balanced. People are sticking to characters that they have, you know, a strong background with, but they're not unwilling to switch. Like, I would say my competitive experience has been very good in the sense that I don't feel like anyone is not trying, which was sort of my biggest fear, was that it would just be an extension of the existing quick play mentality. So that's been really good. On the flip side, though, I think the matchmaking is maybe a little bit rough right now, especially the placement system. But that's sort of an early headache. And I think as soon as you get over that hump, everything I've heard from everybody who's playing on a consistent basis is it gets much better. I do expect them to maybe have to revisit how they're handling group queuing, is the only thing, because I do feel like it's a little rough if you are the lone player or just trying to play with a friend and you get dropped in with a bigger group, because that does have a way more significant impact than I think people realize on the quality of game. If I'm playing by myself and I get dropped into a lobby with a group of four people who are coordinated, they're in their group voice chat or on an alternate voice server altogether, and I can't do anything about that, that can be a little bit frustrating, because now they're trying to coordinate, you're not a part of that coordination, and your opposing team is heavily coordinated. So that's my one gripe about competitive right now. But on the whole, I'm very happy with it, and I'm pleased to see that Blizzard has been very responsive to the initial community feedback around kind of the other things we're going to talk about here very briefly.
Yeah, well, let's talk about these things then. So I had the same experience as you, Kev. We got stomped. It didn't feel good. It didn't feel good that we couldn't play as a group without playing against people who were in a group and much better than us. Which, again, once we get through placement matches, I'm sure it's a lot better. I'm sure it's okay. But to start, you're just kind of like, ooh, this doesn't feel good. And I'm not racing back to do competitive mode on PC yet. But I'm just, how bad
it doesn't help. It doesn't help, right? That when we sat down to do this, if you'll recall, our very first game, so it's just grabbing everybody's quick play MMR, and mine wasn't good. Like, I'm not good at this game, and I have not been playing to win in quick play, so I'm sure my MMR is not anywhere significant. But our first game, we queued in, and we did the math, and all six players on our team combined didn't add up to the level of the one guy who had already prestiged and leveled quite high on the other team. And we commented on it in the match chat, and the guy just said, yeah, sorry, this seems totally out of line. And then we proceeded to get crucified, like never left our spawn destroyed, which I've never had that experience in Overwatch ever until that moment.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, I've never had that either.
It was awful, dude. It was actually awful.
That's gross.
I had that happen the other day to me. It was really, yeah, not fun at all.
Yeah, we needed you on our team, Icarus, to guide the way, because we weren't doing it.
I'm not a shot caller.
So what would you recommend to me then, since I haven't done my placement matches, just do them solo or
actually
another person? Or
I think two is okay. I think two is okay. Sorry, go ahead.
I would solo them, frankly. I would play your placements individually, because it's going to do a better job of checking your individual skill. The chances are you may get dropped into a lobby that has a group. And that's something that can happen, but maybe John's right, maybe two would be okay. But as soon as you've got more than half the lobby in a group, the level of coordination that you're going to run into is just through the roof different, and it makes a huge difference to the quality of your experience, because unless you've been practicing with a group of people that you all have like a good versatile roster of characters and you all practice together on a regular basis, it's not like it is competitive. If people are actually trying really, really hard, and that's going to make you very, very unhappy if you don't actually go in there with a plan and you just kind of, we'll play as three of us and see what happens. You get murdered. That's the end result of that conversation, is you get murdered.
What do you think, Icarus? You think solo queuing or two queuing is kind of better?
Placement specifically.
For placement.
I think my personal preference is to duo queue, just because it feels good to have someone that like you can talk to, you know, someone that you know well, and it can kind of remove the frustration of a lot of more lost matches. So I prefer duo queuing, but I do think that if you duo queue, you want to duo queue with someone who's around the same skill level as you, because if they're higher than you, you're going to have worse placement naturally, since you're playing against higher opponents. And if they're lower than you, you're going to have inflated placement because you're playing against worse opponents than you normally do.
Right, or you totally trash the other guy and he gets placed way lower because he's playing higher opponents. Yeah. And
Yeah, pretty much.
I'm glad we're all kind of on the same page on that. In the end, play it how you want to play. If you're very competitive and you're with a group of people who are also competitive, you can do that. But if you're like us, where we're not, you know, astounding gamers, especially in Overwatch and FPSs, like, we're, you know, take your time, relax. And I wonder how much of it too had to do with it's just the first day that it was out. So the most like hardcore people are also playing. I wonder in a couple of weeks, if you try to do it again, and you tried to go in with a group of three or four, if it would be a bit better. That could maybe be two. It's like when you queue at the beginning of a Hearthstone ladder, right? Where if you queue on the first day, it doesn't matter if you're at rank 17, you're still going to get stomped by legend players because they're all back there too.
Yeah, that was what I was going to say is, looking at everybody I've talked to who's been playing, and people of a wide range of skills, backgrounds, levels of play, I haven't seen anybody yet say they came out of placements higher than maybe like a low to mid 60s, and that was like pro players. And I haven't heard anybody say they came out lower than like a mid to high 40s. And that's people who are dumpster tier, right? They're playing on terrible hardware for fun and just whatever. They play May only or whatever their shtick is, but they're still finishing in that same sort of range. So I don't think that the MMR spectrum has had a chance to really spread yet. And okay. I do imagine that the system is designed so that if somebody like Seagull came out of his placements in the like high 60s, that it needs some time for him to kind of have something to work towards, right? If he came out at 100 because he's the best player in the game right now, he has no incentive to continue to play the system. So I do imagine there's also a little bit of that built into it as well.
Sure.
And maybe it's a distribution thing too, right? Like in all of the other Blizzard games on ladders, there's kind of a peak around the 50% mark. So you would expect to see very few people in the like sub 20 range on this skill rating system and very few people in the like higher than 80 range, but a whole bunch of people in that like 40 to 60 window where there's going to be just the bulk of people are kept because it's like a bell curve distribution, right?
I know. I think when I saw this morning, I was going through Reddit and the highest person, according to Master Overwatch, after placement matches was like a 77 that they've seen. I believe he was a pro for Team Envy. And so that I think that has a lot of validity. And I bet like really bad people probably can get into like the 30s. I bet it's kind of right around there. Then you start to get the bell curve distribution going.
I think there's a Reddit thread actually called, it's "I am officially one of the worst Overwatch players." And he's talking about how he's ranked 26 and just keeps dropping.
Oh, no.
So I think it is, and that, like according to Master Overwatch, it's very few people below 35. So I think it is more of a bell curve.
Yeah, it looks like on their bell curve right now, the lowest anybody's showing is about 25, 23 maybe. But the vast majority of people are hovering right around the like 45 to 55 range. Yeah, so no shock there. And nobody at this point higher than 80.
Does it not surprise you that at least one person hasn't sat down and go, "Oh, I'm going to go play Hanzo and I'm going to go like jump off and die a bunch of times and try to tank my rating?" Do you think that there's anybody who tried to do that and make it worse? Or do you think that that's truly how tight the bell curve is? Or even people who tried to do that are still only in like the high 20s?
I mean, bear in mind, too, that some of how these MMR systems work is also based on volume of people in the system, right? If everybody starts, like if you look at like chess, like an ELO system, right? And everybody starts at 1500 or whatever, to get somebody to a grandmaster rating of 3000 or whatever, there have to be thousands of people in the system. And I would hazard a guess that not all like 10 million or whatever people who own Overwatch now raced to play competitive on day one and are all done their placements. We're not done our placements, right? So maybe there's 100,000 people that have been placed at this point. It'll take time for enough people to enter the system that for the skill differential to actually matter and for somebody who's at the top to actually be able to earn their way further up, that there's probably going to need to be more people in the system as a whole, right? It's the exact same problem you were just describing, John, as with the Hearthstone ladder, because you need so many people in the system losing games, creating stars and win streaks for players to actually get to legend in the first place. It's kind of like a weird economy problem more than anything.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about this next piece. And there's been some initial issues with competitive mode and some of the things that we've been seeing there, including number one, people aren't totally understanding how you're rated when you're playing. And in fact, Jeff has gone as far to say that basically winning or losing hardly matters at all. Or did he even confirm? Did he say not at all? Yeah, your performance, it's not a, you don't get a set amount of experience for a win, is what he says. So it's largely your individual performance is going to determine how you are placed, which was confusing for some people because a lot of systems that exist, it's a, your team won, you gained this much experience more than if your team lost, or something like that. You'd get some sort of bonus for winning. But as far as we can see here, it doesn't look like that's the case. Do you think that there's a bonus for winning in there? Is that what do you think he's saying?
Absolutely, there is. This has been fairly consistent across all of Blizzard's systems that they've built like this. And Jeff has experience having done this for WoW Arena. He's probably cribbed ideas from the guys who are working on StarCraft and Heroes. There's probably a fixed point calculation, right, in terms of win or loss. And it says, okay, a win or loss is by default. If you play against an exactly even team and play a totally average game, you get X points, right? Whatever that number is in their system in the back end. Call it 100, right? That 100 probably goes, well, it goes up or down based on who's favored to win or lose. So if you're playing a teammate or against a team that's rated higher than your own, now you're going to get more points if you win and lose less points if you lose. They also then further beyond that adjust them individually. So I see this because it's a visible number in Heroes of the Storm, for example. When I win a game, I get an adjustment to the number of points I would have won or lost based on the skill differential between the two teams. But I also see a secondary number that adjusts the number of points I have personally gained or lost based on my performance in the match. And that number always kind of offsets and either helps me win by a little bit extra or, defrays the pain of the extra loss. I would be shocked if Overwatch doesn't work exactly the same way.
Interesting. I honestly think for placement matches, it looks like they may not be taking a look at wins and losses as specific placement.
I'm wondering if it's just weighted a little bit less than normal during the placement matches, because I mean, it's opening the MMR so wide so that it can try to figure out where exactly it should be placing you in 10 games, which it, if you think about it, 10 games is a really short amount of time to really be like, hey, yeah, let's put them into the skill here. I hope they have another developer update video with more details about this, because I'm really curious about the back end behind all this.
Sure.
Yeah, I think it's probably a safe assumption, though, that like your placements, they're just moving you around very quickly. So they're saying, okay, by default, based on how you did in quick play, we're going to say you're a 45th percentile player. You won that first one. Okay, we're going to match you against some people in the 55th percentile and see how you do. Did you win again? You're going up even further. And that's the thing, is it just moves you very rapidly up and down the ranks. When you do this in the other Blizzard games, right, you start out playing in gold and you win a couple of your placement matches. Now you're playing against people in diamond that you have no business playing against, and it pushes you back down and just kind of does that. And it's just trying to narrow in on where you belong. So the initial first few games, as you win or lose them, have the widest swing in terms of your skill rating. And then as you get towards the end of your placement matches, it's kind of narrowed in on where you belong, which, to the point that we were discussing earlier, would explain why people are having a better experience after they're done their placements, because that confidence interval is kind of set and you're not moving so dramatically from one game to the next.
Sure. Let's move on. Let's keep going. We're already 25 minutes in and we haven't even touched on the actual stuff we wanted to talk about. So really quick, there are some issues we are seeing right now on control maps where people aren't being adjusted properly. Jeff Kaplan's basically gone out and said they're working on a fix. It should be out shortly. If it's not, they're going to actually remove those control maps from competitive mode until they can get it fixed. The next thing is the Torbjorn damage nerf for console is coming late June, early July. So that's still on track. Sounds like it's more of an approval process thing, as you've seen with the competitive patch. It's taken a couple days for Microsoft to do it and even longer for Sony. So I guess that's kind of how they're trying to figure out. They did say they were trying to get all the patches out on the same day and make that happen in the future. But for right now, It's not something they've been able to do.
Yeah, it's a pipeline problem, and they can just delay mm-hmm. stuff and do whatever they want with Battle.net. So likely is not in the future. If they know they're going to roll out changes, they'll submit them to Sony and Microsoft ahead of time. And then when they get a date back that lines up from the two of them, that's when they'll set their Battle.net date, because they can do stuff on Battle.net, obviously, whenever they want. I did want to clarify, just in case anybody missed it, the Torbjorn is a 30% damage nerf just to the turret. It's not a flat nerf to his whole kit. It's just turret damage.
Yep.
So that's where they're trying to dial him back down a little bit, because that's so powerful on console.
Yeah, and to clarify, that's console only. PC is not being touched by this patch.
Yeah.
I haven't played enough console to really see. Is he really that big of a problem on console?
Yes. I mean, console, there's a few differences, right? Like, you see a lot less high-level sniping, obviously, on console, because it's way more difficult. You see a lot more of the characters who have really good mobility. You see a lot of Torbjorn, you see a lot of Bastion, because they're so powerful, and that little bit of an aim assist on the controller obviously makes a big difference when you're dealing in characters that have that kind of damage throughput, or the hit scan from the turrets, or playing Soldier 76. I would say that the most common characters I run into on console are definitely Soldier 76, Lucio, and Pharah.
Okay. Icarus, you're about to say something about the turrets being strong on console. What do you think?
Well, see, I may be overestimating things, since I've never played like a console shooter, but I don't really get how Torbjorn could be more of a problem on console than PC. Like, on PC, you just get a Reinhardt, walk forward, have everyone focus the turret, and you could do. I don't see something that's stopping you from doing the same on console, since even with it being a bit harder to aim, you can still kill it well before it even does damage to the Reinhardt shield, really. So I don't know why this nerf is here.
The problem that they had introduced when they discussed this originally was when people were doing a whole bunch of Torbjorns. So you'd have four or five on a team, and the turrets placed at cross positions such that you couldn't place anything defensively. And just turrets have no ammunition. They just shoot constantly when they're in line of sight. They track very, very quickly. And the damage throughput is quite high. So with enough of them, it just became a problem of, like, even if you played the natural counters, it's often difficult to actually get close enough to them to do anything about them. And that was just it's not necessarily that it was too powerful or couldn't be countered. It was more it created a situation where people were not playing the game because they didn't want to queue into five Torbjorns and a whatever. And that because that's not a fun experience for anybody.
Yeah,
that makes sense then.
Yeah, it's mainly a hero stacking nerf more than it is a single, but it actually is going to hurt that lone Torbjorn that you have quite a bit because, to your point, one Torbjorn is not wrecking games on console if there's any sort of coordination on the opposing team. All right. Let's go on. Let's do the big Overwatch esports stuff, because this is why we brought Icarus on, because, I mean, he's writing this stuff. The stuff that we talk about, we can hear from the horse's mouth. You're not a horse, though. You're a man. Yeah. Maybe. We haven't seen below. Could be like a minotaur or something, maybe. I don't know. All right. Here we go. So let's talk about it. Before we do, Team Envy sweeps LG 4-0 in the OG Invitational. That was a $25,000 tournament. Did you guys get to watch any of this? I'm assuming, and I shouldn't assume, but Icarus, did you get to watch some of the OG Invitational?
I actually don't watch many tournaments outside the meta analysis, just because it's so high maintenance. Like, sure. I kind of get burnt out on tournaments just recording all the picks from one. But I think I caught a couple of the games, so it was pretty good.
Okay, cool. I've heard really good things about the tournament. I got to watch a couple matches. The shoutcasting was on point. There wasn't any major hiccups as far as production goes. The games were really good, and it was a lot more fun to watch than the other tournaments. I guess the people are starting to figure out how people want to watch Overwatch, and I think they're finally tuning into that, so it's a little bit more enjoyable to watch. But that leads us into the Overwatch tier list and hero meta report, number 16. So, Icarus, tell us how you contribute to this report every week and what your work kind of entails.
So basically, me and Captain Planet, the guy who writes the one on Planet Overwatch, both take a tournament. We look at, okay, we're going to split the game. So like you do this half, you do this half. We both record half of the picks, and then we'll sometimes chat back and forth about meta things, and then he'll make his website post and I'll make my video. And yeah, that's basically it.
Cool. Well, tell us a little bit then. So this last week, number 16, if you can give us a kind of a high level overview of the meta report this week, and then also make sure you check out, if you guys aren't subbed to Icarus on YouTube, you need to do that. You need to watch his videos and reads his articles, because I've got them all bookmarked. I've actually got a little if this then that thing for every time you post a video. I have it and I'm usually watching it within like awesome. 5 to 10 minutes. So fanboying a little bit, but all right, go ahead. Sorry.
That's awesome to hear. Okay. Let me actually open up the data so that I can get some validity to what I'm saying.
Sure. Smart. Wish Kevin would do that. So joke Kev. Joke Kev.
So mean to me. I don't know.
Sorry.
Basically what we're seeing is like this really diverse meta where there's these 8, 9 counting Zarya heroes who are really high top tier. Zarya's just a bit below. But like they're really in the top tier. So you see a lot of switching going on because no hero is truly fitting into one role. Before we had McCree, who could do everything. You know, he could kill people from long range. He could kill people in close range really easily. And with him so nerfed with Fan the Hammer, a lot of his utility is gone. So you've seen these heroes like Soldier 76, Reaper, Pharah, Roadhog, all these heroes that you didn't really see much before rise up because now they need something to replace McCree. And since there's no true McCree replacement, you end up getting a lot of variety because teams will switch for the situation and switch based on what's going on the map and stuff like that. Like for so the second phase of Hollywood, you see a lot of Pharahs. And not so many Reapers, for example, because the roofs are so important. But then you also see at the low end, because there's so many heroes at the high end, the low end kind of suffers a bit. Like all these heroes that already didn't see much play see even less play since there's so many heroes who teams want to run. And you see heroes who are a bit more situational drop down, like Symmetra and Junkrat as well. And then in the middle, you just have some decent heroes that can work well based on the map or the enemy team comp, like Zarya, Tracer, Genji, those sort of heroes. And it's really diverse and pretty fun to watch because of all the heroes in the top end, even if there are some that are down below.
So I'm curious, in terms of diversity of comp, obviously there's reasons, like you can follow the logic that, you know, Soldier 76 became more popular because you needed a hit scan hero because Pharah sort of replaced McCree as the go-to damage dealer. Like all that stuff is pretty easy to follow. Specifically about supports, I'm curious. I know that at the pro level, everybody and their puppy dog basically runs Mercy because Rez is just too good. But in terms of general play, do you think there's a real clear winner in supports? Because we've had this conversation a few times, and I think we all sort of agreed that Lucio is the stronger of the two between him and Mercy right now. But I don't know. Thoughts?
You're talking about like in pubs?
Yeah, just for general play.
I think I prefer to have a Lucio on my team just because it's a lot less high maintenance. You don't have to worry about, hey, I need the person to come heal me. They're just healing you. But if a Mercy's played really well, I think she's definitely the better option for pubs because she can completely swing a match just with one res. Like you only need one good res and that could win you the map off of it. And the healing is just much better. So I think Lucio is preferred if the person isn't completely coordinated, but if you're more coordinated, then Mercy is much better, I think.
Interesting.
Got it. Play Lucio is what he's telling me. I hear that.
Play Lucio. I have another question. Settle a bet. Recently, we've been seeing a lot of these tournaments and competitive scrims and things like that go to a one hero limit. And I'm really curious, as somebody who is aggregating all the data on this, what do you think about the one hero limit for Overwatch? Are you a fan? Are you skeptical? Are you somewhere in between?
I'm kind of in between. I used to be very staunchly opposed to it because I thought it would limit strategic diversity. But Now that I see it in practice, I actually see there's a lot of strategic diversity going on just because you can't run the double hero strategies that you could before. At the same time, though, you end up losing like these awesome compositions. Like there was this one really fun one I remember where you'd go two Widowmakers, one Bastion, two Reinhardts on Route 66, and you'd have the Bastion sit on the payload protected by the two Reinhardts or whatever, and it was like this cool tank strategy thing. And you lose when you get one hero limit. But with one hero limit, like I don't think there would be eight heroes in the top tier if it wasn't for one hero limit, because you just run two of whoever the best was. And it definitely does create more variety. It just doesn't really it creates more variety in individual hero picks, doesn't in overall strategy, because you don't see these double heroes creating interesting and unique strategies.
Do you think go ahead.
I was just going to say, the argument I've heard is that it's not even so much about the strategic variance as it is for the casters and the players, right? For casters, it's way more identifiable to be able to say this player is on, you know, the Winston, rather than having to try and distinguish which player is on which Winston. Similarly, for the players, it's way easier for them to do things like call out ultimate statuses or call targets, because you can say, shoot, you know, the McCree, not, you know, which player name or which skin, as well as they don't have to keep track of competing ultimates. So there's not, you know, for example, not that it would come up, but two Mercies and they're trying to figure out how often Rez is up. The answer would be all the time, but it becomes a lot easier for the players to also keep track of that stuff. And I think that is an interesting proposition, but like, does it bear out in terms of play? Like, do you think that would be healthy for the competitive meta?
First off, Two Mercy does actually come up. I just wanted to say.
Today I learned.
Yeah. But I think it is better just because you don't really have these compositions that feel unbeatable that you have to run every time. Like I know a lot of pros, when they scrim one hero limit, I see it on my Twitter feed all the time. It's like one hero, like not one hero limit. I mean, no hero limit, like the current state of no hero limit. It's a picture of like two teams, five Winstons, one Lucio or whatever. And it's just because there's certain compositions that when you run them are very hard to beat. So it's not just that like it's easier to follow. And I actually hadn't considered that before, but now that you say it, it makes a lot of sense that, yeah, it's easier to follow. But I think it is more for the balance factor that comes into play.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. I mean, I think that's a happy side effect that it's easier to follow and there's a lot, but I especially knowing the coordination level, like we were talking before the show, there's people having to do 5 days a week, 8 hour, practice streams. You're going to tend to, for the players, know who's on McCree and who's not, but it is going to definitely be a nice thing to have for the casters and even the people watching as well. I think it makes it a little bit easier to watch.
It's definitely, I was just going to say, it gives viewers a lot more like interesting stuff going on, because they get to see like their favorite hero more often, because you're not seeing like a double McCree, double Lucio, double Winston composition. And it's like, well, I don't like any of these heroes. You're seeing like a Pharah, Reinhardt, Reaper, 76, Mercy, Lucio, Roadhog or something like that. And you're like, oh, I really like Pharah. I'm glad that they're playing Pharah and stuff like that. So it just makes it a lot more fun for the viewers as well, I think.
Okay, so just because we kind of already touched on the rotation that's occurred, where we've seen obviously McCree kind of get pushed out, Soldier make a big comeback. Do you think there's more balance changes that Blizzard should be making to try to bring some of the less played characters back into contention, or to maybe bring some of the top tier characters down a peg? Are they in a good place, or like would it be nice to see? You know, I'm trying to think of characters that don't get a lot of play, like Zenyatta, I know is on their radar. Does Zenyatta need some tweaks to get him back into a competitive, playable state?
Yeah, Zenyatta definitely needs tweaks. He's basically just like a bad Mercy at this point. His heal is way weaker than Mercy's, and he has to keep line of sight on people. And Discord Orb is pretty nice, and like his DPS hybrid's pretty nice, but Damage Boost kind of does the same sort of thing, even if it's only for one hero. So I think Zenyatta needs some buff to bring him back up, like probably to his orb, since that's the thing that brought him down in the first place, used to be played quite a lot. As far as the other heroes go, though, I don't actually think anyone in the high end needs balancing, because they were all on the low end before McCree got nerfed. It's just that they were substituted too easily. They're not necessarily overpowered, they just are the only ones that really fit right now, like the stuff that pro teams need. I think lower end heroes like D.Va especially, Blizzard needs to work out if they want her to be a tank or a DPS hero, because right now she's a hybrid, she's a jack of all trades, master at none, you know? Yeah. And there's certain heroes like that, like Torbjorn and Bastion are always going to be low played no matter what they do, because a good team will just be like, oh, they have a Bastion. Bastion's dead instantly because everyone just shoots at him at the same time. And same with Torbjorn. So I don't think there's much to do with that, but D.Va big could definitely rise up with buffs, and same with Hanzo.
I wanted to ask real quickly, just because Widow and McCree are so talked about because of the nerfs to them. Do you think it was just the nerfs, or because of also the one hero limit that all these tournaments have been trying out, that they kind of really got pushed out of the meta so far?
It's a bit of both. McCree was like 120% pick rate, which basically means he gets picked twice or three times around about every single game. He gets duplicated a lot, basically. So his strategy was a lot of that, but I think it's more points to hero strength if a hero is getting duplicated, that they're so strong that you can afford to run two of them without weakening your team composition. So I think one hero limit may have played a small part, at least for McCree, but Widowmaker was never really duplicated as much as McCree was, if at all. Interesting.
Got it. So this is really cool. If you guys aren't checking it out, we talk about this every week. If you aren't checking out the Overwatch tier list and meta report, you should. It's over at planetoverwatch.org. And then at the bottom of this, if you don't sub to Icarus, which you should, if you don't, it's on the bottom is Icarus's Corner with the video for the meta analysis. And I just love these because I digest way more, way easier than reading through, looking at charts and graphs. I much prefer the video version for me personally. So thank you for doing that. You make it a lot easier for me to digest that info. So thanks a lot.
That's no problem, man.
Let's talk about your article on Gosu Gamers as well. We're talking a little bit about Soldier 76 and how he's come back. And for the people who haven't read the article yet, if you're going to kind of summarize it and for them to be like, hey, if this is something you want to read about, go check this out. How would you summarize your article on Soldier 76?
You mean like what it's about or like what's in it?
Yeah. Yes. Those, both of them. Yeah. Just like, how would you talk your article?
Basically what I'm doing is I'm looking at Soldier 76 and how he's become the most picked DPS hero in the meta. And it's a lot of stuff like McCree, especially was why Soldier 76 wasn't played that much, and it has been for weeks, because they do very similar things if you think about it. They're both accurate long-range hit scan, and they both have incredibly similar ultimates. But McCree had Fan the Hammer, and Fan the Hammer used to do something like 450 damage or something like that if you had six bullets, whatever, and that was in 1 second. So you just kill people all the time in close range with it. But the rest of his skill set was pretty mediocre, so when they nerfed Fan the Hammer, Soldier 76 really shone because he has better long-range hit scan since it's a constant stream of damage rather than interrupted like McCree's is. He has a better ultimate as well, I would say. McCree's is very easy to avoid and generally just easy to play around. You can kill him before he even gets it off if you're quick enough. Whereas Soldier 76, he can just run around holding left trigger or left mouse button, I mean, and just kill everyone. So a lot of McCree's glaring flaws came out, like Roll doesn't really do anything except reload him after Fan the Hammer, but Soldier 76 has Biotic Field and Sprint. Sprint is more mobility, Biotic Field heals people, and heals are really important. And so it was basically like, all right, well, McCree no longer has Fan the Hammer, so let's play Soldier 76. And Soldier 76 became super popular with that, and the Widowmaker nerf also played into that as well. Widowmaker was obviously the other long-range hit scan hero, and Soldier 76 is 100% accurate at long range, basically. And so he fell into that section as well, where it's like, all right, we can use him as a sort of pseudo sniper instead of Widowmaker as well.
Got it. Guys, what other questions do you have for Icarus about the Soldier 76 article, if any? Putting you on the spot. I really liked it. Like, this was... Sorry, Kev, I saw you smack your lips.
No, I was just going to say, I think there was a great article. I'm more curious, I guess, if you think that the part of the popularity he's got right now has anything to do with the number of tanks being played, basically, and the fact that you can't kill them with McCree anymore. Because it feels like that's a big part of what people are going to do, is just damage at long distances, but not limited to, you know, one shot kill type Widowmaker style damage, right? The popularity of a long range hit scan hero, to me, I think, is a 1-to-1 relationship with the number of big targets that you need to kind of whittle down over time.
Yeah, that's part of it. Like, he still has less tank killing power than McCree, unless he's getting really good headshots or a direct rocket hit. McCree still does kill them faster, but because tanks are so important to kill, you're seeing people like Reaper, Pharah, and Roadhog who can kill them much easier, since, you know, McCree doesn't just do it better than everyone anymore.
Got it.
Makes sense.
You touched on it a little bit about his ultimate kind of being a little bit more reliable than McCree's. Can you expand upon that? And, like, is that really why he's so picked upon now in this meta versus how McCree was before him?
No, he's picked for his base kit. I don't think a hero is ever going to be picked just for its ultimate, because...
Except Mercy.
Except for Mercy, yeah. That's, even then, her base kit's really strong as well. But his ultimate, when you ult with McCree, right, you can barely move, so you basically are ulting, and everyone who's in front of you is always going to be the people who's in front of you and who are potential kills. And then you have like a second's wait before you can kill a lot of heroes. And so a lot of them can just like use a mobility to escape. And so since you're moving so slowly, you're easily killed. But when Soldier 76 ults, he gets his aimbot. And so you can point at like a support, take that support out. If people are running around corners, you can run around the corners and chase them down. That's a big component that it's a lot harder for the enemy to play around, since the Soldier 76 can pursue people out super easily. And he's not just stuck moving like molasses while he's ulting.
Got it. Molasses, something like... There's something there. We'll find out. Somebody will email it. Hashtag dad jokes. Cool. Well, make sure you go ahead and check out those articles. They're really good. We got to close up here with our little featurette. So let's come back here really quick. And then Kev is so excited to talk about this. So let's jump in.
Faster than sight. So predictable.
All right. So this is kind of a continuation of our segment on getting ready for competitive from last week. It's also kind of our email segment for the week, I guess. We got the most adorable email to the payload. When did that come in, John? Like last weekend?
Yeah, pretty close. I would say like Sunday, Monday-ish.
Yeah, this is three, four days ago. I talk all the time, and we try to make sure people are aware that Overwatch is a very popular game, and games are for everybody. So we definitely, you know, constantly try to remind ourselves, like, yeah, the people on the other side of the game aren't necessarily who you think you are. You know, sometimes it's a very diverse group of people, young, old, men, women. You never know, right? But we still occasionally don't think it through to its natural conclusion. And so I, for myself, kind of thought, you know, yeah, the audience for the show is probably mostly, you know, younger people who play Overwatch. It's maybe more guys than women because video games. It's hard to say, right? But that's kind of the presumption we all operate under. We got this super sweet email from a lady. She's almost 60 years old and a grandmother. And she pointed out that when we did our hardware segment last week, talking about mice and keyboards and stuff, we hadn't touched on headsets. And she wanted to know what she should be using for a gaming headset to play Overwatch, because she's got an older one that she's not 100% sure how to sort of optimize with. And it's not her kids aren't around to help her set it up, is what she said in the email. So Her gamer tag is Rulon, and we were so happy. We thought this was such a nice, like, feel good story that there's this grandma Overwatch, as we're calling her now, out there in the world. We talked to JR, and Blues Pro, courtesy of SteelSeries, is actually going to send her a brand new gaming headset. So,
yeah, which one was it? The SteelSeries is. I forget it. You told me which one it was. It was like, they're really sweet. I was, when Katie and I were choosing out a gaming headset for her, it was between these and
it's probably a Siberia, if I had to think about it.
I think it was a Siberia. Yeah. But it was so cool. Like, we were so pumped how to be able to
do
that.
It's such a nice story. Like, I was so blown away because, I mean, this is somebody who's older than my mom, you know, and just sits down and plays Overwatch for her own enjoyment, which makes me happy. Like, I just think that's, you know, I got lots of jokes when I talked about this. People like, oh yeah, Blizzard made a game that's so easy, even grandma can play it. Like, whatever, fine. I think it's awesome. And I love that, you know, people out there are just, games are for everybody, man. They're for everybody. And to have somebody like that, who's not only a fan of a game we love, but listens to our show, just icing on the cake. Like, so Rulon, if you hear this week, thank you so much. Your message meant the world to us, and hopefully your new headset gets there soon.
Enjoy it.
Thank you so much. Like, we our Slack chat just exploded when we got that email. We were so excited. So yeah, enjoy that, and we'll help you set it up if you need some help there. And
we got you.
The other thing, make sure you turn on the Dolby Atmos setting in Overwatch, as it really, really gives you a really good surround sound. You can kind of hear where things are coming from.
On PC.
On PC.
On
sorry.
PC. If you're, I don't know if she's on console or PC.
PC only. Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. Yeah. And so in general, we do want to, you know, for everybody else who's not getting one in the mail from us, there's lots of choices for headsets. You know, generally speaking, you want to find something that's got good sound quality. There's lots of good reviews online. You know, strong gaming options exist from SteelSeries, from HyperX. I personally haven't used any of the Razer products. I don't know if they're any good. If you guys have any experience with the Razer stuff.
Yep. And I think, aren't you wearing a pair right now? A pair of Krakens?
I'm wearing the Adagio DJ ones.
Oh, those are sick.
Nice. They're really nice.
I've owned quite a few. I've owned Krakens. I liked them okay. I'm a headphone snob in a lot of different ways. Like, Kevin and JR and Jimmy kind of make fun of me because every week I'm like trying out a new pair of headphones and tweaking this and trying to make it, you know, something sound better for that. And I've used the Astro A40s and A50s. I went from those. I loved those. But they were a little bit heavy, and they also gave me a weird echo. So I loved them. They worked for about 2 years, like, flawlessly. And then recently I had to replace them, and I actually replaced them with the Turtle Beach 800Xs, which are like really expensive high-end gaming headphones, like ones that you want to play for marathons or you want to be wireless. And these are cool because they're truly wireless. You don't need the dongle on your Xbox controller to use. And there's also no microphone that comes out and over across your mouth. Sounds pretty good. It sounds about as good as my Astros did from the microphone, but it's not as amazing as Turtle Beach has some really good built-in mics that they have for their console headsets. Obviously on PC, I'm the biggest advocate in the world on PC. If you can help it, get a standalone mic for your voice and a pair of awesome headphones for the game, and I think you'll have a much better time playing. But that's just
me. I second that sentiment. Definitely, I think it's really, really good having a separate mic away from your headset. Because generally the built-in mics are kind of weak, to be honest.
Yeah, I was going to say that this also comes back to kind of feature set, right? So when we talked about keyboards, we talked about picking all the different things you might want with headsets. There's lots of features within headsets you want to consider above and beyond how good they sound. You know, some people really like being able to have like a detachable cable so they can replace just the cable if something happens to it. You know, built-in microphone if you actually want a headset as opposed to headphones and a separate microphone is a factor. if you're buying a headset that does have both and has the microphone built in, you have to consider whether or not you want one that has USB only, in which case you won't be able to use it with any non-computer devices, or you want one that's got standard 3.5 millimeter jacks, in which case you have to make sure that whatever you're plugging in the microphone to has an amplified input port. It won't work with something like a Mac laptop, for example. They don't have the ability to use a non-amplified 3.5 millimeter input on some of the older ones, at least. I don't know if that's, I don't even think they have 3.5 millimeter input ports on a lot of the new ones. So yeah, there's lots of things you should be looking for. Make sure that you've got kind of all the stuff you need in terms of, you know, making sure that it meets your use cases. And test them. Test as many as you can get your hands on. Try different things. Go to a Best Buy or whatever and go put a few different sets on and see how they sound if you have that option, because it's worth doing to find something that sounds good to you but is also comfortable.
Icarus, do you have any headphones that you're especially fond of that you'd advise listeners to look at, or microphone combos, or?
Well, if you want a desk mic, I think the go-to one, if you don't want to spend too much, is the Blue Yeti, probably. Yep. I would say that's the one that I'm using. It's cheap, but it's, you know, it's a nice desk mic, very sensitive and stuff. And the headset I got, which I don't think they sell anymore, but I'm using right now, is the Siberia Raw Prism. It's, sorry about my dog. It's okay. It's a SteelSeries one. I think SteelSeries makes a lot of good stuff. Everything I own is SteelSeries, so I'm kind of biased. But that one is pretty cheap. You could probably find it on Amazon or something for a good price, because I don't think they sell them anymore. But I had one before, and I don't remember what it was. It was some Logitech thing, but I remember that one lasted me like a good 3 years, and the sound quality was incredible on it.
Wow.
But yeah, I think... I don't know. SteelSeries is what I've got.
Yeah, I had a pair of, I think it was G930s from Logitech. It was like a pair, like their first wireless 5.1 headphones, and I really liked them. But then I graduated with something more once people really started figuring out and making affordable the wireless piece. So, I think that's it. Did we hit it all? I have to ask it every week. I think we did.
That's the whole shebang.
That's the whole shebang. Thank you guys so much for hanging out in chat. If you have never caught the show live, we do it every Thursday night at 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time at twitch.tv/blizzpro. iTunes reviews, if you do like the show, iTunes reviews go a long way to be able to support the show. It helps us in how we are seen, and when people are reading through the shows that they're looking at for Overwatch, they look for the ones with the most reviews, and we're doing pretty good there. But every review helps at any given time. Yes, that's a giant cupcake and a giant piece of pizza behind me, Chad. That it is. You have to be watching the video for it.
Making me hungry, man.
Dude, me too. I always get so hungry after the shows because I'm talking too much, probably. Let's do some shout outs, though, for the week. And Icarus, we'll let you go first. Where can everybody find you? Where can they sub? What do we need to know?
Well, it's Icarus Gamers on everything. I'm mainly active on my YouTube and Twitter, though I haven't really gotten around to streaming yet. I have a Facebook and Tumblr, but don't go to those. I don't use them anymore. It's Icarus Gamers on everything. I just post some like guide sort of content on my channel. I try to be education focused as much as possible. So if that interests you, then it's youtube.com/IcarusGamers.
Yeah. Awesome. Kev, what about you, man? What are you up to this week?
Not a whole pile. Given that we're not doing well met this weekend, we had a few days off. Yeah, I'm taking a video game sabbatical in a way this weekend. I'm going to go visit my sister, spend the long weekend out there, and kind of try to just not spend the whole weekend in front of a monitor if I can. But yeah, obviously I'm staying plenty active on Twitter. I'm working on getting together a stream schedule. And for those of you who don't know already, I know. I actually did some work on it this week. It's part of why I was working on my desk setup last night. So feeling pretty good about it. But I also have an Instagram, and I've been posting pictures on all my work trips when I'm out doing all the cool stuff. So If you're interested in that, my username on Instagram is Vectivus.
Cool. Jimmy, what about you, man? Besides moving.
Yeah, besides moving.
Playing a lot of mobile games right now, catching up on some 3DS stuff and iPhone stuff. Not a whole lot of PC gaming until I get everything really set up there. Unfortunately, I don't have internet till the 8th. So until then, that's when I'll be able to start. I'll probably play a lot of Overwatch that weekend. So just kind of hanging out for a bit right now.
You're going to fall behind, man.
Yeah, I feel so behind right now. It's awful. But other than that, just watching a lot of streams. Not playing so much video games, but
do you know what I do when my internet's out? Do you know actually picked one of these up. So check this out. This is something called a Game Vice. It sits in my iPhone, and I actually I can run like a bunch of games. I've got Pokemon Red on here, so I've just been running through Pokemon and Zelda. It's really sweet, and it makes my phone look even bigger. So if you run out of streams to watch, Jimmy, snag a Game Vice, man. Play some Pokemon. You don't need internet for that.
There we go.
Whew. All right, well, let's go ahead and get out of here. Thanks so much for being here again, Icarus. You schooled us all with your knowledge and wisdom and our silly misconceptions. Thank you for setting us straight. You made new believers here today. You can find more Overwatch stuff throughout the week at overwatch.blizzpro.com. You can check out our music over at jakebutno.ca. Jake does all of our music for all of our shows, and it's amazing. We get compliments on it every week. And a big thank you to scythedesigns.com for our graphic work. And of course, find us on Twitter at Payload Podcast. Send us your emails to thepayload@blizzpro.com. Send us your iTunes reviews on iTunes. And of course, you can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, Podcast Addict, Google Podcast, and basically everywhere. We're everywhere now. If you've got a podcast app, we should be on there. And if we're not, let me know and I'll get us on there as fast as possible. Whew. All right. That's going to do it for us. On episode 29 of The Payload, we'll see you guys next week. Bye.
The Payload is a production of BlizzPro. Find out more about Overwatch at overwatch.blizzpro.com. You can find your host throughout the week on social media. Find Jimmy on Twitter at DJ Tyrant, Kevin on Twitter at Lack of Realism, and John on Twitter at Kicked Tripod.